The following is a duplicate of tape 2, side 2, of an interview conducted with Gilbert Leung for the Southern California Chinese American Oral History Project.
Here it goes. Only that our backgrounds were different. And maybe our speech, you know, they would speak with a slight dialect. And other than that, I think we were pretty compatible. Well, there weren't enough girls to go around. I think that was part of the reason, you know.
They were hot.
And also, these students that came over from China would come over, get their education upon graduation. They would be going back to China.
Mm-hmm.
And for them, it was the greatest thing because they already had their Chinese background. They come over and get a degree, and many of them would go for a higher degree, master's or even doctor. And when they went back to China, they were in a position to go for high posts.
Mm-hmm. That means that they were older students than the American born.
Maybe slightly, only slightly, because they would have, some of them, already years of college in China. Mm-hmm. Before they came over.
You mentioned that your best friend in college was a Japanese.
Yes,
no.
Because we were very suited to each other. We both liked to play tennis.
Mm-hmm.
We attended dances together. We both liked to go out and sketch. Mm-hmm. Watercolors and so forth. And there were several occasions when we needed some help in the restaurant, and here I asked him, and he was perfectly willing to come, and he was built much heavier than I.
Mm-hmm.
Muscular. I had a time getting him into some of those tight white jackets that we had.
So how did your parents, you know, feel about him? This was close.
No, my parents accepted him. As long as he was my friend,
mm-hmm.
He was welcome. And he came, he would visit us. Now, not too much visiting at the home, but mm-hmm. several times in the restaurant, and
mm-hmm.
they knew I was out with him.
Mm-hmm.
Or playing tennis or
mm-hmm.
one thing or another. It wasn't until those war years with Japan
mm-hmm.
that my mother got very involved with collecting money to be sent back for China relief.
Mm-hmm.
And the way the Japanese carried on their war against China,
mm-hmm.
and what, Philippines and,
mm-hmm.
and the islands and so forth, and they still refer to that period as the Rape of Shanghai.
Mm-hmm.
And it was only natural that my parents, particularly my mother, was very much against the Japanese.
And did she direct any of this feeling towards your friend?
No, I think she just as long as it was a personal relationship
mm-hmm.
between her son and this Japanese boy, that was all right. Because
mm-hmm.
he couldn't help it. He was
uh-huh.
he was a local born over
mm-hmm.
here. But my mother had very definite ideas about the country of Japan
mm-hmm.
itself and what they were doing to China.
Mm-hmm.
So she spent all her extra hours
mm-hmm.
canvassing this town, and she would take the red car and she'd go as far as the beach cities by herself and seek out the different laundries and the Chinese restaurants and take and record and collect their monthly pledges.
Mm-hmm.
And several other women did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And these monies were brought back to the Zhonghua, and
mm-hmm.
it was all recorded and receipts and all of that sort of thing. Money was sent back to China.
Now, was this a particular organization she belonged to?
I think it was called a Women's Auxiliary of the Zhonghua.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very active during those war years.
Were parades held or different? What other? What was the effect of, you know, the war in China with the, you know, the Japanese, the Sino-Japanese War on, say, the Chinese in Los Angeles or upon your family?
Well, no, there were no parades that I can recall. Mm-hmm. Parades are generally a celebration of something. There were many meetings and I guess things like pep rallies,
mm-hmm.
and to stir up more Chinese citizens and countrymen.
Mm-hmm.
To get behind this thing, and you couldn't physically help, but if you worked hard and donated money,
mm-hmm.
it would, and also through the rate of exchange,
mm-hmm.
it would go towards relieving suffering
mm-hmm.
back there and help the war effort. So all the Chinese throughout the whole United
mm-hmm.
States and other countries too
mm-hmm.
took sending of money,
mm-hmm.
China really very seriously.
Now, do you recall what years this took place now? This was before World War II.
Well, Japan fought and occupied China,
mm-hmm.
I think as far back as 36, 37,
mm-hmm.
4 or 5 years before war was declared by the United States.
Mm-hmm.
on Japan, which was 42.
So during all those years,
during
your mother was
active,
involved.
Right.
Yeah.
And there were, I recall, a certain man today who was a doctor, a medical doctor, and he was from Singapore,
mm-hmm.
Chinese man.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good friend of ours now. And he was an eloquent speaker.
Mm-hmm.
And he was studying at the White Memorial Hospital at that time. And I recall that he went around to the service clubs, and I particularly remember the E-Bell Club.
Mm-hmm.
He was very much in demand because he's a good speaker.
What was his name?
He is today Dr. Samuel Pong.
P-H-A-N-G.
Uh-huh. And coming from Singapore,
mm-hmm.
he had an English accent,
mm-hmm.
a little different from our California. And he was a wonderful speaker.
Mm-hmm.
And he would speak about, you know, the war situation,
mm-hmm.
The unfairness of it, and how Japan was taking advantage of China.
Mm-hmm.
He was a political speaker. And there were many calls for him after
mm-hmm.
the first one. And today, when I see him, I still remind him of all those wonderful speeches that he made.
Now, during this time, weren't there some changes taking place in Chinatown too? That when you're mentioning about the 19.
Oh yes, along about that time, old Chinatown was being the lower part of it was being torn down to make way for the Union Depot. I don't remember exactly what year the Union Depot came about, but it,
mm-hmm.
it was somewhere around, yes, I do remember, because the exodus of half of the Chinese population and Chinese places of business from old Chinatown moved up to North Broadway in 1938.
Mm-hmm.
The first ones that had to go were the ones they were east of Alameda Street,
mm-hmm.
where the Union Station is now.
Mm-hmm.
The ones west of Alameda Street had a prolonged stay. They didn't have to move immediately, and we were in that group.
I see.
The first ones that went up to Chinatown were the Grandview Gardens, and the restaurant that is now the Hong Kong Lao. Previous
mm-hmm.
it was called Zhe Yin Lao,
mm-hmm.
and Manzhen Lao, Choi Fa Lao, and then the art and curio stores. Yi Hong Gui was was the success place. Yihongu was a little old restaurant on Alameda Street, and it was a small place. I don't think it held more than 30 people. Little tables, sawdust on the floor, and you sat on round stools. And on this table was a tumbler with the fork, with the chopsticks in it, and then paper napkins. And it originally was a little restaurant for the Chinese men, mostly, that didn't have families. So for, I never ate there, but I imagine it was for very little money, something like 50 cents or even less, they would have a house soup and perhaps all the rice that they could eat, and they would have one or two, one main dish. And that was Yihongui. That place was put on the map because Harry Carr was a feature writer on in the Times, and he wrote about that little place, and he put it on the map. And then from then on, American clientele would start in. Oh, and another feature of that little place was the kitchen was exposed. So as you, and they would have a line up there to get into this little place. And the people standing in line there, waiting to get in, saw the cooks cooking when they walked, you know. And that was the first Chinese restaurant with an exposed kitchen that, I think I'm correct. So when they moved up to the new Chinatown there, they took the place that was on Hill Street, right at the entrance there. And they had an exposed kitchen. A brand new restaurant with an exposed kitchen. And they lined the people up for years. There was every night there'd be a line up there.
What happened to the restaurant?
Well, this is when they enjoyed the greatest popularity. And as I say, Harry Carr publicized them. And then with going up to New Chinatown, new building, they were a huge success. Well, they were successful that way for many years. I don't know, 10 years, maybe so, until more and more other restaurants opened up. And then the competition finally wore them down.
I see.
They were the first Chinese place to have an exposed kitchen.
Now, when was your restaurant affected by the move? The rest of China?
Let me think now. It must have been, I think it was after 1946 before we had to move. Because I had, I have to relate this back when I was let out of the Army. But in the meantime, we had taken a second place up in the new Chinatown. We bought over a restaurant that somebody else started, and they didn't stay in it very long. And it was a small place. It was also called the Suchao Restaurant. And in that little restaurant, I used the gold pattern tea paper for all the walls inside, and we had a, I had made some large theatrical masks. The masks were, maybe 2 feet, and the biggest one was almost 3 feet big, 3 feet in dimension. And I'd taken rope and dyed it black for the beard. And there is a picture of these masks in a little book called Los Angeles. I think it's called, and it's by Garding Louis. And it was put in for the grade school children. And they took a picture of our little restaurant with a mask out in front. In this little book, I have it.
Do you still have the masks? Or?
I don't have the mask. The mask deteriorated finally.
I see. How about the restaurant?
Because we were outside. The restaurant was sold finally.
What is the name of that restaurant? No, where the restaurant was located.
Well, it went through several,
several
hands. I don't remember the different names now. I remember the different people. Richard Fong took it over for a while. And
is it still, is the location still
there? The location is still there. The unfortunate thing about that little restaurant, it is on a little street that is blocked off by Grand View on one end,
mm-hmm.
and it's far enough away from Broadway
mm-hmm.
that it isn't very visible.
Oh, I see.
So you have to know where it is mm-hmm. to find it. Although we enjoyed years there. In fact, the China Society used to meet in our place. And in fact, it's more or less, it may have started in the old Los Angeles, but it continued mm-hmm. up in the new Chinatown. And we served them a special dinner. There were tables mm-hmm. of 10, mm-hmm. and mostly it was American return missionaries and people interested in education,
mm-hmm.
former college professors and so forth from China.
Now, were you ever involved in the starting of that new Chinatown or the old Chinatown?
The Chinatown itself?
Uh-huh. I mean, not the old Chinatown, the China City.
No, I had nothing to do with China City or even the new Chinatown because I was still in school at the time. I do remember, and as I mentioned perhaps before, Peter Hsu, who mm-hmm. is really the founder of New Chinatown.
Mm-hmm.
I was still in school, but he had some plans
mm-hmm.
that were drawn by an architectural firm. And he said, Gilbert, would you like to see the plans of New mm-hmm. Chinatown? And that was my first look-see into the Peter Hsu was more or less of a, we had a small fraternity, he was mm-hmm. a fraternity brother. But I did not personally get involved with Chinatown until years later when I had my own practice and my practice with my partner
mm-hmm.
From Shanghai.
Mm-hmm.
And we started to do some buildings in China. I've done several association buildings, the Gaokong Association mm-hmm. building, I did the Baptist Church, I did David Chow, so that whole block in there, buildings that I did, and then I did on the corner the showroom and warehouse and living quarters for Mrs. Fong Si, who is my wife's stepmother.
Mm-hmm.
Then I remodeled other places, like the Celestial. I did some remodeling for Golden Pagoda.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I get one here and one there. And then some homes for Chinese away from Chinatown.
Mm-hmm.
I have a number in Silver Lake area.
What homes
Hollywood.
Were these?
And what homes I did in the uh-huh. Silver Lake? I did a home for Dr. Edward Lee, and
mm-hmm.
I did a home for Dr. George Chan.
Mm-hmm.
I did a home for Lily Suhu, who was the vice consul, and a number like that.
Any other? Did you design any other buildings in New Chinatown?
I did the Guangzhou building,
uh-huh.
Which is now the East-West Savings and Loan downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
And the upstairs is the Association Hall
mm-hmm.
of the village that my father came from. We are Sunwei
uh-huh.
village. And, an interesting thing is that at our old restaurant on Los Angeles Street,
mm-hmm.
at the rear of that restaurant, there was a little alley that you entered from Ferguson Alley.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had to make a complete right angle turn. And then you came upon a little courtyard. And that was the little Guangzhou Temple. It was quite a quaint little place. It was two stories with a balcony.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I had some pictures of it now. And the meeting hall was downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the tradition.
Mm-hmm.
The temple was upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
And I have learned from the Chinese that you never put something else on top of the temple. The temple is on top. Nothing goes on top of the temple. So in this temple was a big Guan Gong figure, and all the sign work and the calligraphy plaques, and a lot of embroidery, trappings, swords, long swords, all that sort of thing. It was quite a place, big drums, gong, so forth. Now, when Chinatown had to move, all these things were stored in a warehouse for a number of years until the Guangzhou building was built. And then the temple is on the second floor now. And that was in 1960 when the building was finished. And on dedication day, the Guangzhou people, they put on their Cheng Sams and their Bok Mos and so forth. And these relics and this big Guan Gong and all the trappings were taken out of storage, and they were paraded through the streets to the new building and carried upstairs and installed in the temple amid firecrackers and the lion dance. And, oh, it was a big, it was quite a, quite a celebration.
Now, is there a priest associated with the temple?
No, Chinese temples, especially little temples like this, I not so much a priest he's almost like a caretaker. He's the man that when you go there, you buy the incense from him, you buy the candles from him, and you buy the paper money from him. And if the place isn't open yet, he opens it up for you, and he turns on the lights. And then the Chinese, mostly women, that come there to buy sun. And they would bring cooked chicken and cooked pork, and I think eggs, hard-boiled eggs, bao, and fruit. And they would place it on these compotes, usually dishes that have a little raised base to it. They would light the incense, and they would do their incantation. And this was done on a pad. They are on their knees.
The women do the incantation,
the,
or the?
The women, yeah, the women do their thing. They don't have, because not in China, I guess they would have a namo. It would be like a priest. But we don't have them here. It isn't that affluent a temple, you see. It's a hangover. It's someplace where, now, for many years, I said this building was finished in 1960. And we have a, they have a place there where you, you burn the paper offering and so forth. And it enjoyed some patronage, not a great deal. But today, with the influx of Chinese from Taiwan and Hong Kong, it's a busier little temple now. You get many women that come up there during the day and buy sun.
Are there certain days they buy sun?
No.
Or is there
no. They have reasons on what day. I think they consult the almanac and so forth. And depending on what they're praying for. There is one god there. I think she's a goddess of mercy, I think. Kun Yam. And the women come up there to pray either for so that they would bear children, or if they're already bearing it, that it would be a man-child or whatever. The main god there is the Guan Gong. He's a big figure. He's over life's eye. If you haven't ever been up there,
no,
you
I
would
haven't.
Find it very interesting.
Now, is it open on certain days?
Yes. I'll see that you go up there.
Oh,
we'll have a
thank
date.
You.
Okay.
Now, how about membership to the Guangzhou Association? How has the new immigration affected membership, or has it? Is it limited to certain people?
If you are from that village, you are welcome to come. They would like you
just
to come.
Just for it's just for from people from a certain village?
From a certain, it's a provincial association.
Not from a district?
Well, it's Liong Yap, it's Gong Zhao and San Wei and Hok San.
So people from those two districts.
I call them villages, or maybe the term should be expanded, I don't know. If you're from those two places,
uh-huh.
then you're automatically welcome to come and support it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a nominal annual due, something like $4 a year. And then they have that, what they call Hyongyao.
Uh-huh.
Hyongyao is a donation to keep the oil burning in the temple. More or less, you know, Hyongyao.
Uh-huh.
Hyong is incense
right.
and oil
uh-huh.
for the lamp.
I see.
And that is as you desire. If uh-huh. you want to give $5, $10, uh-huh. $20, whatever, free will donation. And when you, after you make your donation, you're given a receipt, and it's usually on a pink piece of paper.
Uh-huh.
And a duplicate of that is pinned up on the wall. And then the whole one side of the place is covered with these little slips of paper uh-huh. showing who donated.
Now, how long does that stay up?
For that year.
For that year. Yeah. Now, how did all these stores around New Chinatown that you were just mentioning, these restaurants, happen to, you know, move up to New Chinatown area?
Well, they had to move because they occupied the area that was being cleared out for the building of the Union Depot.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, that constituted more than half of Chinatown. The portion east of Alameda was a mm-hmm. greater portion than the portion west of Alameda.
Now, did they organize, or?
Well, they knew they had to go in a matter of time, so they formed a corporation and bought land in the North Broadway section.
Yeah. Who were some of the members of this corporation?
Well, the ones that were the members of the corporation were the ones that had to leave, and were the first ones that built buildings up there. And the first buildings that were built up there was Zhonghua Weigun,
mm-hmm.
and Y.C. Hong built a number of buildings, those fronting on Broadway, such as Li Po, his own building. And then there was a restaurant building that he built and then leased.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Man Zhen Lao
mm-hmm.
people built. Did I mention Choi Fa?
Mm-hmm.
Grandview?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yi Hong Gui, when that's when I told you about
uh-huh.
the waiting in line. That was the main nucleus.
Okay.
And I think Jin Hing was one of the first ones that went up there too.
How about the CACA? I noticed they have a building on Bamboo.
I think Jin Hing and CACA came along a little later because the CACA was in the Gagne building.
Oh.
And Jin Hing was on Los Angeles Street. That's east of Alameda. So they were the second half
mm-hmm.
that moved.
Now, who, do you recall who were some of the others who were in the Garnier building?
Yes. In the Garnier building, there was the, you went up a set of stairway, a wide stairway, and to the left-hand side was the Zhonghua Weigun,
mm-hmm.
to the right-hand side was the CACA. And that's...
This was on the street floor?
No, on the second floor.
On the second floor?
Second floor. And that's where some of the dances were held because it was a large room and it was available for groups to have dances, or sometimes college groups, sometimes St. Valentine's dance, different New Year's dance.
The CACA?
CACA once in a while would sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think the Bing Gong Tong was also in that block.
Not in the Garnier building.
And I'm not too clear. The Garnier building consists of about six stores. And then the section north of that, you wouldn't call that the Garnier building, but there were these Chinese stores along there. On the very corner was the only Chinese drugstore. And I forget what the name of it was called, but it was owned and operated by a Dr. Chi, C-H-E-E.
A Chinese
drugstore?
No,
he was a He was a Western medicine.
A regular pharmacy kind of store.
He had a pharmacy, and he was a doctor. Mm. I think he had an office someplace else, and he owned this drugstore, and they had a soda fountain, and that was a Chinese sugar bowl.
Oh.
That's where the guy came around and met the gals. Right on the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And now it is restored back, and it is that little fire station. On the and upstairs was a small restaurant, but it was popular with some people. It's called a Yin King Lo, very small place.
So downstairs was the fountain.
Downstairs was a fountain and drugstore.
And upstairs was this little Chinese restaurant.
Right. And then the stores next to this drugstore would be, well, there was a rattan and bamboo place there.
Mm-hmm.
The Lao family owned that. And he was quite prominent in the Chinatown politics, Zhonghua. And I don't remember too many of the other stores there now.
Mm-hmm.